Chase Down Podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. How's it going, Carter?
It's going lovely. We have a Cavs victory, so I think fifth finals appearance in a row is due.
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange to see the conference finals go to a eighth game, but you know what? I'm with change in sports. I think it's a good thing. And to help break down, because we're going to deep dive into this game one of the preseason. We have I'm struggling how to properly introduce you, because Alex is somebody that I really expect. Alex, I really should have asked you how to say your last name beforehand. Alex Kungu, is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, that's the best way to say it.
Nice.
That is in the realm of, I would like to say that, like, I also have my name in my Twitter handle, and people think that it's, like, it's my middle name, and people think it's, like, something else. And I think there was a world in which that could have been something else for you, too. But it is your name.
Alex, as I said, is someone that I really respect his opinion. You do fantastic work for the Stepien. But most importantly, at least for the purposes of our podcast, you're a Celtics fan. And you are a Twitter frenemy. And for that reason, I was very excited to get you on. So we're going to talk about how Jetty Osman is going to bring back all the nightmares that LeBron brought to this rivalry with Cavs and Celtics. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm very happy to see that the Celtics continue their hot shooting from Game 7.
Pretty hideous, man. I'll tell you what, I think the Cavs are going to win a lot of games when their opponents shoot 0 for 40 or so from distance.
Oh, my God.
I guess you could make an argument that that is just proof that Boston has narrowed the gap and they're on the same level as the Rockets now. Right?
I did not sign up for this abuse. Cut it out.
You know what our abuse is going to be, Alex? Watching a team without LeBron all year. So I think you still win, if that makes you feel any better. We get to victory lap on you once, and that's what we're going to do.
I was about to say, all the summer jokes, I thought, okay, now that game one of the preseason is here, there's a realistic chance that things are going to get really depressing in a hurry. And to be clear, they are, but I'm able to punt that down the road. And as somebody that naturally procrastinates a whole lot, that made me happy. And we get one more game where we can still make some Tristan Thompson, Al Horford jokes. So, Alex, in all seriousness, what were kind of some of your observations? It's so tough to take anything out of preseason. Was there anything in particular that you were looking for or looking at as you watched that game last night?
Well, I mean, yeah. So I was looking to see how the Celtics kind of played off one another, because everyone just kind of assumes, okay, a lot of ball movement, a lot of passing and stuff like that. Everything just going to flow very easily. And I think a lot of fans got tricked into believing like it was just going to be some quick transition. And I don't think people understand that, like, the Celtics run a lot of flex offense, which is just, you know, a lot of ball movement, a lot of options, and it requires all five players on the court to be on a string. And I think it's very clear from these first three games that the Celtics have very little chemistry. Some of, like, their best moments have mostly just come, like, from guys individually having, like, good moments. Their best lineup was maybe, like, a bench unit against the Hornets bench unit, when it was all guys who have like all been there from last year. So what I saw was just a team that really doesn't really know how to play with each other yet, which is fine. You know, it's preseason. That's kind of what that's for, to kind of understand that and hone in. And I think Jaylen Brown at the end of the game had a really good quote where he said, it's basically me, Gordon and Tatum. We all kind of do the same thing. And we have to find a way to play each other, because right now we're all not trying to step on each other's shoes, but we're also not helping each other either. And I think that's a really big thing. Like, guys are just not playing with each other right now. It's a lot of individual basketball.
You know, it's funny. It's funny about them, because I think, like, we kind of thought that they were going to fundamentally change the way they play a little bit now that they're going to have all this talent back. Obviously, Kyrie didn't play in this game, but Hayward was back, and you know, they still have all this potential on the perimeter, but it really felt like with the starters, the offense still flowed the best when they're using Horford as the hub.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think part of that is obviously Gordon Hayward's still not as familiar, and they're going to rely on him a little bit, ball handling, being like a point guard and stuff like that. And I don't know, everyone expected Jaylen Brown to kind of take more of a backseat, become more of just, you know, catch and shoot type of guy. Nobody told Jaylen Brown that. Jaylen Brown is out to get his buckets. He's being very opportunistic. I was expecting to see more of like a guy who would try to like play within the offense, try to progress, plays more. And I mean, he's mostly just taking the first shot he sees, and that's kind of it's kind of concerning, but also not, because it's still the preseason. But it's just something to look at for at least from the South.
I remember we had a little bit of a back and forth because you had tweeted that you wouldn't be surprised if Jaylen Brown led the team in scoring. And as a former and current Kyrie stan, that immediately, like, all my reflexes to defend Kyrie kicked in. And I'm also just curious how Jaylen Brown's going to do that without being able to dribble.
Oh, my God. Well, well, as you see, he will shoot the second he touches the ball. Does not require much dribbling. No, but I mean, I guess my point with that was just because I was seeing how opportunistic he was going to be this year,
right?
And I wondered, like, if Gordon Hayward is just willing to kind of be like a wing version about Horford. Kyrie has seemed very like willing to just kind of play in the offense, and then kind of when the game's on the line, it's like, okay, like, give me the ball. So I kind of wonder like how aggressive he'll be offensively. And I was like, in that world, you know, there's a chance that maybe just Jaylen Brown being the only guy who's sitting there like, okay, you know, I'm going to take these shots. I'm going to play in the offense. There was a chance. But as you and Sam, I guess another friend of this podcast, talked me out of it relatively quickly, that I realized, you know, like, it's probably not going to happen that way. But I do think that him being that opportunistic, considering he's maybe our fourth, fifth option, isn't great right now.
Yeah, it's like, it to me it almost sounds like you like want him just to play like a supercharged Danny Green, like a more athletic version of Danny Green that has a little more bounce, but like mostly be a low usage guy that exerts most of his efforts in transition and on defense. I'm interested in Hayward because I haven't watched a ton of Celtics, despite having bet against them in every single game so far this preseason. I think he's still looking a little unconfident, and I felt, I not to play body language doctor, but I'm going to, cause I just thought it was interesting, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. He kind of almost looked like a little frustrated when he would like take it to the cup, even when he got there. It looks like he's still like coming to terms with like where he's at right now.
Oh yeah, and during the broadcast, one of the beat writers on Twitter was talking about how Kyrie was giving him a pep talk, like when he'd come out. So he was very visibly like frustrated with, I guess, just kind of not having it yet. Which, I mean, it makes sense. Like, you're used to being one of the best players on the court. You come back and it's like you're throwing the ball over the rim on like wide open layups. It's probably pretty frustrating.
Yeah, that layup was so concerning.
Yeah. So he's kind of been really tentative. And I think, surprisingly, Isaiah Thomas, not our Isaiah Thomas, the NBA Hall of Famer.
Hey. we were nice enough to invite you on our podcast. Please do not say our Isaiah Thomas. He might be your Isaiah Thomas, but he will never be our Isaiah Thomas.
I knew I wasn't going to go ahead and say that. No, but he made this really good point where he was like, I'm waiting for Hayward to just kind of be free, like let his body just kind of be open, like just go for it straight up. And right now, I think kind of what we're seeing is like he's a guy who's still kind of playing not to be hurt right now. And I think that's going to take a while to shake, because he's going to have a couple of rough games. He's going to have to take a couple of falls, but I could see it turning around by maybe December, but like he's definitely at a stage where it's all, he's second guessing himself with about everything, and it's showing in some of his like attempts and takes to the rim.
I honestly think the comparison you made earlier about Hayward being a kind of perimeter Al Horford, I think that's a really smart observation. And I always thought Hayward was at his best in Utah when he was in that role. He's just such a talented player, and he's somebody that will give you rebounds, he'll give you assists, he'll give you steals, and he was always contributing between like 19 and 21, 22 points per game there. But I thought towards the latter half of his stay in Utah, when he was really being the team's primary scorer, I thought sometimes that took a little bit away from his all-around game, and he wasn't able to be as effective defensively at times. And when you look at this Celtics roster, I think Jason Tatum is just a tremendously talented scorer. Kyrie, I think, is one of the most gifted offensive players that we've seen. And as you said, Jaylen Brown, even if he is a little limited when he's putting the ball on the floor, and that's an area that he's growing in, as you said, he's been assertive. He's going to take shots. He's very, very smart off ball. And you have three guys that can really be play finishers. And I think if the Celtics are going through those three guys as being the guys that, hey, we're going to finish the plays, and Hayward's going to get his points within the flow of the offense, Horford's going to do the same, I think it makes them a really dangerous team and an unpredictable team. Do you see that as kind of the best role for Hayward, or would you still like him to be kind of the more assertive number one or two leading scorer on this team?
I'd like to briefly interject by noting that it is interesting that Gordon Hayward could be the wing version of Al Horford, because Jetty Osman, you have referred to as the wing version of Tristan Thompson. And both are going to live in the Austin dudes' heads for years to come.
That was fantastic and great performance, Art Carter. Alex, thanks. Would you like me to respond?
to answer your question, I don't really see Hayward, like, at this stage, like maybe like this year, I don't really need him to be the number one or two option. I wouldn't mind if it was like Kyrie or Tatum or even Kyrie and Jaylen, at least for now. And I think I should differentiate. I misspoke. Hayward's going to be a top two option, but in terms of actually like scoring the basketball, I could see a situation where maybe Jaylen or Tatum scores more than him, but he's still maybe like the second option because he's going to have the extra ball handling duties. And even a little bit in the Cleveland game, you saw kind of how in the second unit, he was so running the point guard. So I think they're going to put the ball in his hands a lot, just as much as Kyrie and Horford, rather.
Right.
But I could still see a situation where someone like Tatum or Jaylen is outscoring him for the year.
Right. And I'm going to assume that you are assuming that Kyrie will also outscore him.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I was just thinking about, while we were talking about this, about how important it is in hindsight that Jason Tatum hit. Like you'll remember, that was not like a super popular pick on NBA Twitter at the time. And like, how differently do we think of the Celtics ceiling with returning from injury Hayward and a young Rudy Gay? Because that was a big comparison a lot of people were throwing out, right? Like, it's
right.
Like, it just shows you like how crazy the margins are. Like, you take a big swing like that, and if you miss, the Celtics do not even remotely look like a, I mean, I don't know about even remotely, but I don't think we're talking about them like we're talking about them now as potentially a team that could challenge the Warriors down the line.
Right.
No, for sure. It is crazy because, I mean, their top two wings right now are both number three picks, who were just very recently drafted, and it's very hard to win.
Neither popular.
I mean, for sure. So it's like, a part of it is really lucky because you're really relying on youth right now. And the rule of the NBA has been for a long time that you can't win with youth. And I guess part of what makes Celtics so exciting right now is that they're winning with this youth, which then kind of, you know, ties into like the longevity, or at least potential longevity, of how good this team can be. I actually didn't know Tatum was that unpopular pick at the time. I think I was just like kind of like so lost, like, in the Celtics sphere. I actually didn't know he was that unpopular on NBA Twitter.
I don't know if he's not popular, but I think there was this like Ainge is like outsmarting himself kind of thing.
He,
like,
that he
just
was,
take Fultz and shut up.
Yeah, that he was getting a little too cute with it. Were you some?
Yeah, I mean, I personally said Fultz was one of the best players I ever scouted, so I was very hot on the Markelle Fultz train, and I was not happy the day he traded that pick.
And to be fair to you, because as I said, I built you up as being someone that I really respect your opinion on prospects. What happened with Fultz isn't something that anyone could have seen coming. Like, there's. That guy took so many shots in college. He looked absolutely fantastic, and I still think he can be a really good player. I don't think the book on him is closed. But that how that played out, that Boston traded down, you got Tatum, who I think exceeded a lot of expectations. I didn't expect him to be that good of a three-point shooter in his rookie year. Like, that was my biggest concern with him, and his polish with his offensive game is incredible. Then in addition to that, you also got, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's how they got the Kings pick, right?
Yes, correct.
Which is terrifying me, because the Kings are talking about playing Scal Labissiere at shooting guard. And
I didn't know that.
Yes, they are playing him at shooting guard. And I really do not want this Boston team to end up with RJ Barrett.
You mean Cam Reddish, the best player in the draft, right?
Yeah. Okay.
You are aware, Alex, what country Justin hails from.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I'm saying what I'm saying right now, because I know exactly how he feels about the topic.
This guy that advocated for Markelle Fultz, number one overall, thinks Cam Reddish is better than RJ Barrett.
Oh, okay. Torched his ass.
No. But yeah, I mean, to kind of go back to your point. I do think that, like, with us hitting on those picks, it does kind of aid into more of, like, the longevity of the team and how well we predict on the future, because I thought we were going to end up picking Josh Jackson, to be real. And it's just crazy to think, like, if you end up with Josh Jackson, someone who, I mean, played well for Phoenix in the second half of the year, but...
I guess. I think that dude sucks.
Like, he can't shoot. Like, his defense is a little iffy, and... I kept hearing about how he has such a competitive fire, and I think people were confusing that with just anger issues. I don't think it's competitive fire at all. I think he just has anger issues. So it's like things could have really gone very, very left for the Celtics. So there's definitely a lot of luck in it.
No, if you make scowly faces, you were a competitor. It's never ever a negative.
We have to believe in that now. We have Colin Sexton who likes to use a flexer and a scowler. But I like him, unlike Russ. So to be clear, I'm not comparing the two.
I liked Russ early on. It was just when there was never any progression to his game.
That's fair. We should probably move over to talk about the actual game on the Cavs side of things, because for better or worse, we are Cavs podcast. We should at least hit on it. Alex, what did you see out of the Cavs? It was certainly very ugly at some times, but in terms of the young guys that are probably going to figure to play, roles for this team, Jetty Osman, Colin Sexton, did anything jump out at you on that end?
I was really impressed with Colin Sexton taking and making a couple of catch and shoot threes. I really like seeing that. I saw Love was featured more, which I assumed would happen finally now that, you know, like he has to at this point. Mm-hmm. And that was good. Jetty Osman hit like this one, like very vivid, like pull up three right in the face, I think, of like Jaylen Brown. And I don't know why, I just remember that. It was just such a confident looking shot. Like he just pulled up right in his head like it was nothing. And I was like, okay.
It was a pretty jarring. I mean, that's the kind of shot he takes for the Turkish national team a lot, where he plays more of a lead guard. And I thought Jetty's game was really interesting, because it was like him starting to find himself within the context of this new team. Because it was like, all right, last year, all I did was cut and maybe take some spot up threes. And then early on in the game, he was trying to take like Jaylen Brown off the dribble without a pick. And it was like, nope, don't do that. You're not there yet, buddy. And then but over time, he definitely settled into a nice middle ground, you know, taking that little pull up three and, dribbling himself into rhythm and pulling from three. And that stroke is certainly looking a lot better. Still being very aggressive in transition. He had that really nice take. I think he faked out Mook Morris on the way to the bucket. So he's kind of finding his way of like, okay, how do I play in a higher volume role without being someone I'm not? because he's never going to be an off the dribble phenomenon. I just don't think his handle is ever going to get there.
Yeah, another thing I guess I should ask you guys, let me turn the tables a little bit. I was kind of expecting to see Colin Sexton kind of play more of like a point guard role, like bring up the ball, pick and roll. But like from my recollection, I didn't see that a lot. I saw him kind of being used off ball more and like maybe like running around, like playing off like maybe like off screen, off ball screen and stuff like that, mm-hmm. rather than being like on the ball and trying to create. And is that something that you guys are like expecting to be like the thing this year? Or is that just until like...
This is sort of the problem with starting George Hill, right? Like, George Hill is getting the start, at least to start the year, and it's clearly like a nod to the fact that they want to be competitive and that, you know, you're going to prioritize your veterans, at least, you know, in that capacity, in that role. But I don't think the roles on this roster really make sense with Hill as a starter, because on the starting lineup, you have Hill, Hood, Osmond, Love, and Thompson. Love can get off his shot, but he's not like a primary initiator, and Hill is really more of an off guard at this point in his career. Hood can create a little bit, but he's not a passer by any means and never has been. Osmond is an okay passer, but as we noted, he can't really dribble, so he's really a better secondary creator. So you don't have a lot of primary initiators in the starting lineup. And on the bench, you have Sexton and Clarkson, both dudes who want the ball, who aren't particularly good shooters, and have almost no experience playing off ball at a high level in their career, cramped alongside a traditional center and Larry Nance, Sam Decker, who is ostensibly a stretch four but isn't a capable shooter, and then poor Kyle Korver is the only spacer. So the lineups really would make a lot more sense if you just swapped Sexton and Hill, and I think they're eventually going to get there, but I do think Sexton, to your point, was sort of deferring to Jordan Clarkson a little bit, which makes sense. Clarkson's a vet, right? But I just don't think these lineups are going to make sense from a roster construction standpoint until those two roles get flipped.
Okay. And I think Joe Vardon wrote about this on The Athletic. There was something about J.R. Smith chastising some of the younger teammates about ducking calls from trainers. Do you guys find that concerning at all?
We already decided on our last podcast that it had to be Jordan Clarkson because he's the one we don't like.
Yeah, it's the analogy we made is it's like Timberwolves fans saying that there's no issues with Wiggins and Towns and it's all on Jimmy Butler. Because
Butler Jordan and Clarkson, Tibbs.
Right. It's definitely those two. And
By the way, in the GM survey that came out today, Cat went from the guy that most teams would want to build around for the next 5 years, and then he fell off the list entirely.
Yeah, there's definitely no fire there. It's all smoke.
Nope. But, and word definitely doesn't get around, and guys definitely don't complain about their players.
But I think it's really interesting. To quickly circle back to your question about whether or not that's concerning. I don't think that was Colin Sexton, because all kind of reports on him are that this guy is just kind of a competitive weirdo that is always in the gym, that is always working on his game. And outside of that, and Jetty Osmond falls into the same kind of category. So if it's like Rodney Hood or something like that, that wouldn't exactly be out of character and it wouldn't surprise me. If it's Jordan Clarkson, that would really not surprise me. So I don't think it's any of the pieces that we really have to worry about. And in terms of Sexton being a primary initiator and bringing the ball up, I think as he becomes more comfortable with the offense, with the team, you'll see a little bit more of that. As Carter said, I think once he's starting, it makes a lot more sense. But it seems clear that the Cavs understand that if they're going to be competitive, they really don't have a guy that's good enough to be a primary initiator on the wing. And they want to have a lot of guys initiate the offense. They want to have a lot of ball movement. Jetty Osmond had 4 assists and was kind of showing a little bit more passing. Kevin Love was getting assists. So I think you're going to see Sexton, even if he becomes the lead ball handler, I think he's still going to play off ball and they're going to try to find creative ways to get him looks. They even had Tristan Thompson throwing a pocket pass out of the post, which that was one of the more jarring things I had watched yesterday. But I think it's going to be a process. I think they understand that Sexton has a ways to go before he develops the kind of vision he'll need to be a successful point guard in the league. And they're not asking him to do too much too early because he does kind of have some shortcomings in that area.
On a slightly different note, David Nwaba looked pretty good, huh? I was kind of surprised to see him come be so far. Like, he was honestly playing with the Cavs' third team. But he kind of showed some sparks. I mean, it is only three. He got to the line a bunch. He had a stretch where he scored like 8 points in three possessions. And I think he's going to be a guy that I almost wonder, like, and I'm sorry, Alex, because I know this isn't going to be that interesting to you. But again, we do have to service our guys after our fans after our first after the first game of the season. But I do wonder if eventually they'll just say, fuck it, we'll just go really small and play Nwaba at the four instead of Decker, because Decker looked awful.
That's interesting. So, like, is the whole – do you think the Cavs are really, really just trying to win this year, or is it one of those things where, like, they'll try, but if they're, like, 10 games under 500 in February, they'll start looking to sell pieces?
Well, I think
– so I feel like David Nwaba is someone that, like, playoff teams are really going to want in February.
But it didn't – that didn't play out that way in the free agent market. I actually feel like it was kind of cold for him. I mean, the best deal he got was a 1 year minimum deal with the Cavs. Like, cause
he was offered a 2 year deal from the Pacers, but yeah, he's certainly betting on himself and he's betting on his fit with the team. Alex, to answer your question, I think what they're trying to do is build a structure and they're trying to build somewhat of an identity. I think they're trying to be competitive, but with Hood and Jetty starting, it's clear that they're trying to get these young guys some run. Larry Nance is obviously going to become a big part of what they're doing. Sexton, I think him not starting is just really to try to make him earn it and help him evolve as a player. But I think the veterans get sold off. Like, I think at some point this year that happens. I just don't think David Nwaba is going to be one of those guys. Like, I think there's a relatively low ceiling on this team. But they're not going to try to just outright lose like we saw with the Sixers in the Hinkie era. I think they're going to lose in the service of trying to develop better habits and expand their games and get Jetty Osmond to initiate offense and things of that nature.
Yeah, the funny thing about the Cavs structure right now is that they have all these guys who aren't quite young, like Nwaba, Nance, Hood.
Right.
They're all 24, 25. It's just a really odd... Hold on. I'm having some issues. I'm going to step away for a minute.
Okay. Well, we will talk about different things then. Alex, I just want to ask you, because I've seen you comment several times on kind of being high on the Toronto Raptors and really... The sense I'm getting is that you feel that they're going to be a challenger. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, if that is an accurate read of how you feel on that. How do you feel Toronto and Boston stack up this season?
Okay, yeah. So my whole thing is I definitely do think they're the number, I don't know, 1 or 2, 1A, 1B, however you want to flip it. I think it's them in Boston,
right,
as of today, as the top teams. And I'm kind of buying them, but like it's also like a qualified buying. So like me just doing my usual hedging. So yeah. I think that there's a world where they could beat Boston. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that I really believe in their defensive versatility. Like I like the fact that they can throw out guys like Lowry, Siakam, OG, Kawhi, like Serge. And just have those type of like long switchy people that can really like stifle the Celtics and turn them into like a one-on-one type of team. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, they do have the best player in a potential series as Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi right now looks like he is very much healed from his injury that he was cleared from last December that apparently has been hurting him ever since. But I mean, he looks very healthy, even though he showed a little rust, but he's getting to the line a lot. I think last night he got to the line like 8 times already. He's being integrated very hard into the Raptors system right now. I think like his usage rate was like 30 in the preseason right now. So they're really trying to get him involved. So, I mean, like, you have maybe, you know, 2016 Kawhi, who's like 25 and whatever, star on both ends. You maybe have like another good Lowry year, and then guys, maybe Pascal and OG, you know, like they take reasonable like bumps up. There's a world where like they could pose a threat to the Celtics. And I do like what they're building, because I feel like it's the best of both worlds. Like, you take a big hit now and you go for the championship, you go for it all right now. But even if it doesn't work, like, you're able to still kind of easily transition into your next phase of rebuilding with pieces already that are going to be playoff tested, that are going to be like young, interesting pieces that you can kind of just move forward on and not necessarily have like this epic drop off.
Right.
So I'm buying a little bit of what they're selling, even though if you ask me like straight up who's better between Boston or Toronto, I'm going to say Boston by a smidge.
Yeah.
But that's subject to change.
Yeah. I'm coming in a little late. Dealing with some technical issues on my end. Who are you more scared of between Philly and Toronto?
It's Toronto. I don't even think Philly's a top three team in the East, to be honest.
Yeah, me either. I think
Philly's who do you have in there? Milwaukee?
I do.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Like, legit, I do. I think you guys are wrong. I just think Philly is like a mid-40 win team, like masquerading around like they're like this 52 win team. When we know, like, their last 16 games nearly doubled their point differential. Like, that's noisy as hell. Mm-hmm. There's no way, like, they're that good. Like, I see them as, like, a 45, 47-1 team. I think Toronto or Boston would kick their butts in a playoff series. Might even take Milwaukee over them, too, in a playoff series. So, it's like, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I'm not buying them, really selling.
Yeah, I'm not buying them either. I think we're kind of, like... I think we are going backwards and punishing them for looking so shitty against Boston, which is fair but in a sense, I also think it's a little unfair from the perspective of, listen, like, we looked at them barely being able to beat, or Boston beating them and going, huh, Boston didn't even have Hayward or Kyrie. They really must not be good. But then the Cavs had just as much trouble. I mean, the Cavs eventually won, but it took LeBron going like straight up God mode for those four wins. Like,
yeah, the playoffs were really weird in that way, is that both Boston and Cleveland easily could have lost in the first round. Like, the game seven for the Cavs, that basically came down to Tristan Thompson coming back to life and Tyronn Lue putting him in the starting lineup, and even then the final score was a thin margin. Boston came down to the wire with Milwaukee. Game seven went to overtime. And then what frustrated me, because I thought Miami was actually going to give Philly a really good shot, and they implemented a very similar defensive strategy as the Celtics. But what happened was you just had Marco Bellinelli hitting like these 360 threes.
Bellinelli was nuts in that series. I forgot.
And Ersan Ilyasova hitting a bunch of shots. And then against Boston, they just missed the same shots. Like, Miami was up at halftime, I think, in each of the five games, and Philly just kind of got radioactive hot. And I think down the stretch, Philly kind of,
I mean, they had an easy schedule down the stretch. I very much recall that. I mean, like, that one Cavs game that they won in overtime was like pretty much their only difficult game out of the last like 17.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going to be something that carries over really well to next year. I still think there's questions about Embiid's health.
Is always a, you know, mitigating factor here.
Yeah, and they replaced guys that were productive with the skeleton of Wilson Chandler. Like, I really do think that Milwaukee had all the pieces, and the issue was strictly coaching. And I believe Budenholzer is a really good regular season coach. So I just give them the edge, and I think Toronto and Boston are the clear top two, and then it's Milwaukee and Philly, and it's going to come down to health and execution at that point.
I'm definitely with you that, like, both of us are big fans of the Bud hire, because it's like, Bud had a bunch of unexceptional teams in Atlanta that didn't have any pure superstars. Sorry, Al Horford. Sorry, Alex. But like a bunch of really pretty good players. And he does finally have a star to play with, who who has always needed a good coach and never had one in Giannis. So I get it, and it's certainly an interesting one, but I just think you're being a little too hard on Philly's talent level. Like, what if Fultz look like? Yeah, they lose some noise on the other end, but if Fultz is a functional NBA player, which seems certainly possible, maybe I'm crazy, but seems possible, then that raises their ceiling significantly as well.
Does it?
Yeah.
Does it really? But like, by how much though? Like, is it the difference?
If he's good? By a lot.
Is it? I think, okay, so right now, I think you're agreeing that Boston and Toronto are the top two teams, right?
Yeah,
so,
one and two.
So their ceiling probably at the best right now is, what, the second round?
I think their ceiling is making the finals if it breaks.
Okay.
Like, I don't think they're in hugely separate tiers.
But by okay. breaks right, do you mean the limbs of most of Boston and Toronto's players? Or?
Oh, my gosh.
I thought you were getting ready to make an Embiid joke. But anyway, go ahead.
No, but like reasonable expectations. Like if you were actually putting your own money into how far the Sixers would get this year, would you try out of the second round?
Well, because you know I don't believe in gambling. But yeah, I probably wouldn't bet them to make the conference finals at this point. No.
So then that's my question. How much does Fultz really lift their ceiling is kind of what I'm getting at then. Because it's like, if like reasonably expecting, like we're not going to expect them to get any further than they were last year, how much is he actually lifting their ceiling?
I don't know, man. It just depends on how good he gets. Like, I mean, like it kind of goes back to what I said earlier. It's like, how much did Jason Tatum becoming who he ended up being alter the trajectory of what we consider the Celtics ceiling to be? Like, if he's number one overall pick good, which I mean, it feels like a stretch to say, I admit. But if he is number one pick good, then that kind of changes everything.
True. But at the same time, how long does it take him to get there? If part of their season is trying to raise their ceiling and investing in Fultz, that probably is going to cost them home court against Toronto and Boston and possibly even Milwaukee if things get weird and let's say Toronto falls a bit because of injuries or same thing happens with Boston.
Toronto seems like a little creakier than you guys are acknowledging.
No, I definitely think that's the case. And part of why I was going to say I'm probably more bullish on Boston this year than even Alex. Like I really do think that they're a relatively heavy favorite to make the finals. I just think that there is more sure things there. Like, honestly, they don't, even if Gordon Hayward wasn't really part of the equation, I think natural steps that Brown and Tatum would take and just how well-rounded that roster is and the firepower there with Kyrie Irving, I honestly still think I would favor them. And if Hayward can get back to even 85% of who he was in the past, I really just think that that's so much to overcome. Like that is just a really deep and talented team.
I think if Hayward is not where he is, not like at least a pretty good player by the end of the year, I would put Toronto above them. I think Kyle Lowry is going to be not.
And then you're assuming that Kawhi
is. I'm assuming Kawhi is where he's at. I just think I don't know, man. Like this is such like an old school scout from Moneyball take, which is like not where you want to be at this point, but it's like, I think they just lost kind of a losing mentality in DeRozan. Like DeRozan was like, so like, listen, we tried. Like,
okay. But they still, the second most important piece is a very similar guy in Kyle Lowry. Like we saw him quit in the middle of a playoff game.
Yeah. But there's just a different energy when you got a guy who can put his dick on the table. And Kawhi can put his dick on the table when it matters. Like
I always say that's what's best about our podcast is that thud when I do the introduction.
I love that expression so much because there's a certain subset of the population that just is like, yep, I know what you're saying. And then there's also a certain subset of the population that's like, oh my God. Jeez, cool it, man. And I like that.
Alex, what do you think is the biggest
Carter, that would have been such a good transition if you just didn't break out laughing. Alex, what do you think is the biggest storyline for the Celtics this year? What is the X factor and thing that you would be looking for this year?
I think the biggest thing that we're going to be looking for is, I think how it all fits together, like how the offense and the defense works, because you have like all these players that most agree in like in the modern NBA, like they're perfect, like they're good fits, they're versatile two-way pieces. But a lot of it is going to be about how Brad plugs and plays throughout the year, how he keeps guys like motivated and engaged, and also trying to keep all those guys motivated and engaged while also trying to build up chemistry, because that's something that is very much lagging at this juncture. So how it all comes together is going to be really important for me to see like how it develops over the season. Because mm-hmm. I don't know, like I don't think like it's as like, I feel like it's going to happen, but I don't think like it's as promised. Like if you would ask me in July, I'd be like, okay, this is going to work. I think it'll work, blah, blah, blah. But like from what I've seen so far in the preseason, I'm at the point of like, okay, let me just see it first and then I'll be confident. And I just haven't seen it like yet. Like I haven't seen guys all move together on a string. And I just think like there's history of teams that are very good on paper that just didn't click the right way and just didn't, you know, like all on the same page in the right way. So I just want to see it first and then I'll be a little bit more confident. But like right now, that's like my thing to watch right now, like how they all kind of like learn to play off one another on both ends.
Right.
I have a buddy who kind of has a knack for like describing things in kind of unconventional ways that still nail it. And he made some comment. We were talking about the Celtics because I agree with you. I actually think they were the most interesting team in the league this year. I'm like fascinated. And he described the Celtics roster as the kind of roster that you accidentally build 4 years into your 2K franchise. like everyone's pretty good and everyone's kind of switchy and can kind of shoot and kind of dribble. So, you know, but like it's not quite as smooth as you anticipate it when you're putting them together.
Right.
I think some of that like sameness that this roster has, that in a lot of ways is considered the ideal, you know, having a bunch of wings with size that can handle and shoot, it kind of creates this weird problem. It's like, well, who am I supposed to feature here? How am I supposed to structure this? Should I just attack mismatches? It's because what happens when all your guys are the same size is defenses just start switching everything there too. So it kind of gums up your offense as opposed to having several specialists, which can kind of force a different reaction out of the defense. So there is like an interesting level of they fit every ideal that NBA Twitter loves, but we really don't normally see it in action. And even, you know, even the Warriors are chock full of straight up specialists. Klay Thompson still can't dribble.
Right.
Draymond Green can't shoot. They have all these interesting weaknesses that define them. Whereas it's funny. It's like every player in the Celtics starting lineup, that core five, they're all B to B pluses at everything. But there aren't, outside of Kyrie, which is, I think, the biggest X factor, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of A plus pluses on this roster. Do you think that's fair to say, Alex?
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I think another good like theme you hit is that even though like in this modern NBA, everyone wants to talk about positionless basketball, roles are still important, even if you don't believe in positions. I still think roles are a very important thing. And kind of what you described, like the Warriors, they all have very specific roles and they know what they're good at and they stick to that and it all kind of fits together as a team. Not because they're all versatile switch, even though that works, but because like offensively, they all kind of know what they do.
Right.
And I think when you look at the Celtics, guys aren't fully sure where they are or where they fit in the offense, specifically at that wing position. And I think until guys, and what I really think is going to happen, honestly, is guys like Jaylen Brown, well, let's say specifically Jaylen Brown, is going to have to learn, like, yes, I work all summer on beating guys in isolation and dribbling and scoring out of the pick and roll, but my role right now is to stay in the corner and hit threes, or to move off ball and catch a lob or make a good cut. My role is not to do all these things that I worked on all summer. And that's tough for a kid that age to, like, hear that. But in order for this to work, like, he has to accept roles. Like, guys have to accept specific roles, especially at least, like, while they're in their, like, potential starting five. Like, that's the only way it's going to work. They all can't be everything. And I think that's really, like, a stupid point that you made.
Yeah, it's funny. You want to be positionless on defense, not offense, kind of.
For sure, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the issues, like, even the Denver Nuggets ran into last year. Like, I thought the absence of a clear pecking order, especially with a guy like Jokic, who is so talented but can be unselfish, when you have four or five guys out there that are all unselfish and are capable of initiating the offense and making plays, I think sometimes when the game kind of slows down and it's those final possessions and guys are kind of wondering, okay, well, whose turn is it? I think that's when it's really important that you do have someone that's a finisher. And something Boston did last year, obviously, was in those situations, you just go to Kyrie, which is a very, very good solution a lot of times. But I definitely agree that establishing those roles and the pecking order is going to be big for Boston as they try to figure things out and find out what the best way for the play is. I love the contrast with that and kind of how you have some trepidation towards the Celtics on how everything is going to work out in contrast to how things were with the Cavs, where we basically just had to believe in blind faith. Well, we haven't seen it work all year and everything's a mess, but come playoffs, it's just going to fall together. I guess that's the difference of just kind of the Celtics culture and Brad Stevens and just how structured everything they have is.
Can we go back to that point real quick? How is it that you, like, when you guys were rooting for the Cavs and obviously LeBron's on the team, you kind of understood, like, the blind faith, like, okay, we have LeBron on our team. Like, eventually this is going to sort itself out. Why are you so low on the Lakers when you know this is how this is going to work? Like, well, you know in February something's going to happen and they're going to get the guys that they need and they're still going to somehow end up being okay.
Well, because the Cavs had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. Like, to be clear, I picked Toronto to beat Cleveland in the second round. Like, I was not confident this last year. That was not a good Cavs team. And the fact that they made the finals is still hilarious to me. But the previous years, there were stretches where they were good. Like, in 2015, down the stretch, that Cavs team was just flat-out dominant. Like, they were just destroying teams, and that gave you some confidence. And then Kevin Love got hurt in the first round. My confidence was shaken there. Kyrie also got hurt in the first round, which was unfortunate. And then after you just doubt LeBron or doubt the Cavs in that situation, he still found a way to beat those Hawks and sweep them. And then from there, it was just instance after instance of being worried and concerned. And then it just working out. And to answer your question, why I'm a little less skeptical or why I'm skeptical of the Lakers is I just don't think they have anyone with a Kyrie or Love ceiling. And I think that they were more established talents at that time. The supporting cast doesn't make a lot of sense. And this is just an older LeBron. Like, Carter and I had discussions over the last 2 years if it was even possible to build an average defense around LeBron. And when they add all these other guys that don't play defense, that don't shoot, and in a much tougher conference, it really makes things difficult.
Yeah, so in fairness, I do want to note, I'm higher on the Lakers than Justin is. I think they're going to win like 53, 54 games, which I think is around where their Vegas over-under is. So I don't think I'm particularly low. What I will note is that for all the talk about getting different kinds of players around LeBron, guys who can handle the ball and create, and instead of all these specialists, I think in theory that always sounds nice. It's worth considering. The Cavs did that in the first half of the season. They got Dwayne Wade. They got Derrick Rose. They started guys who they even Jeff Green likes to dribble. He's not much of a shooter. Like, they got guys who like to go get their own bucket. And
all NBA player Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, and you know what happened? The Cavs got outscored while LeBron was on the floor the first half of the season. Even while they were racking up points, like, they weren't able to be efficient offensively because, one, LeBron works so hard that he takes plays off when he's off ball. Two, he really doesn't like to run. Three, he couldn't generate clean looks for himself because he was sharing the floor with Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose, which, hi, Lance and Rondo.
Right.
I do think that's a concern. I think they have a lot of guys who don't fit very well in the court with them. And I think, you know, it's one of those ultimate NBA Twitter tropes is like, why don't they move LeBron off ball? And they think they've like reinvented the wheel. But it's like,
we're going to play him at center because he doesn't have a historic amount of mileage on his body. Let's give him more responsibility than he's ever had at the one thing that he doesn't do well, even though every other aspect of his game is fantastic. Let's make him anchor the defense. And
like anchor the defense and have him set screens. It's like, it's like he still has this reputation as a guy who's not that good of a scorer, or like that you want to use him as a screener and a roller and a secondary playmaker. And it's like, I'm sorry for all the complaints about Cavs offenses and LeBron-led offenses over the years. Oh, that's just high pick and roll and high pick and roll. It's like, one, these offenses always score well in the playoffs and they always rank among the league's best. So I don't understand why we're so invested in the idea of changing the way LeBron plays. I think the way LeBron plays is just fine.
Alex, you got Carter very fired up.
You didn't get me fired up. I think dumb people get me fired up. Like, I just think, like, NBA Twitter is so convinced that they get it, and all these NBA coaches and executives are like, oh, that's what we could have done this whole time. It's like, no, it's worked pretty well for LeBron.
Yeah, I do think that gets lost a lot of the time, where it's like the reason, like, you play like that is because it works. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why, like, for example, like, they didn't let Kyrie just be like the main point guard. It's because when LeBron has the ball in his hands, good things tend to happen all the time. So it's like,
right,
I get that.
And
I get
they that. Tried that.
Like, why are we so interested in like people like want LeBron teams to like to run? What do we want him to run? The Princeton? Do we want him to be setting off ball screens and cutting a ton? It's like
David Blatt did.
Yeah, I don't see the value in putting a savant in a box, and that's what a system is. So you have to like be flexible. Like now, like Brad Stevens, for example, I thought did a really good job of putting a different savant in Kyrie offensively, giving him enough structure, but letting him loose. But guys don't want LeBron to play high pick and roll for some reason, and I'll never understand it.
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I think if Brad Stevens was coaching the Cavs, I don't think he would have done much different than Ty Lue.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah, like, what do you – like, yeah, I agree with that.
Oh, man, I can't believe they have one of the best offenses in NBA history. We gotta set some back screens, boys.
Let's we have the one of the most gifted passers in NBA history. Let's have him spot up to give space for Rondo to operate. It's a little weird. Before we run too long, I want to wrap this up with a little bit of fun. As I mentioned, guys, follow Alex on Twitter, Kungu @_NBA, and read his work at the Step In, especially with the Cavs likely picking in the lottery, or at least a lot of us think that that's the way it's going to work out. You get to know the prospects really well and probably better than you would just watching college basketball, because college basketball is a bastardization of the game. Alex, I'm going to put you in a really tough position and ask you questions about guys that you haven't scouted and that are way too early to come up with a conclusion on. I want you to tell me whether or not they are going to make it in the NBA. And we're going to start with Bronny Jr. NBA player, yes or no?
Oh, that's going to be a future Celtic Hall of Famer.
Beautiful.
No doubt.
Beautiful. Dwayne Wade's kid.
Dwayne Wade's kid, G League.
Okay. Are either of Lonzo's brothers going to make the NBA?
No.
No?
Okay. Wasn't LaMelo supposed to be a better prospect? Or am I crazy?
He might. Yeah. No, he was supposed to be probably like the second best one after Lonzo. And I think there's actually legitimate NBA buzz around him. I'm just not that high on him because I think he's building too many bad habits at the GBA. So I'm kind of out on him.
How about Al Horford's son? Is Al Horford's son going to make the NBA? I know he's probably like 5, but still, is he going to make
the NBA, have a nice little 15-year career? Career averages 7-7-2. Efficient, great screen setter.
I dig it. I mean, people forget the Horfords have a rich history there. Tito Horford was an NBA player, and Horford's father, Tristan Thompson, is still playing with the Cleveland. Oh
my god!
But yeah, that would be really great to see that legacy carried on. Alex, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Again, follow him on Twitter at @Kungu_NBA. We are going to continue trying to do these podcasts, second podcast a week, just talking a little more general NBA, and bring on some experts for other teams so that we can learn about the league more and have some fun. So thanks again, Alex. Thanks to our listeners. Remember, support the show, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, send a screenshot of that rating or review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And we would be more than happy to send you an invite to our Discord. So thanks to Alex. Thanks to Carter. And until next time, go Cavs.